us are on the way. And a pickup on my sleeve. They call my team insane. Say I'm the one to beat. So you better bring your A game and start playing. Cause every single week another win for me.
Yo, commissioner, you can just pay me now. City win first place, then take a bow. Finish on top, I'ma set the standard. Don't believe me, you could check the standings. When I draft, I make smart selections. Got more sleepers than a narcoleptic. Meet your match, kid, my lineup's nasty. It's far-fetched, thinking you might catch me. No surprise, I'm taking home the prize. Only time I rest.
Welcome to another episode of the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational Podcast, the Beat the Shift edition. I am your host, Ariel Cohen. I am here, as always, with Ruvane Guy. Ruvane, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Justin not here once again. Hopefully he'll be back next time. But we have a special guest on with us today from Roto Grinders, from ESPN, and he is the creator of the Bat Projection System. A big, warm, Beat the Shift welcome to Derek Cardi. How are you, Derek?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, our pleasure. Thank you for being here. So we've got a lot of great stuff to talk about. And let's jump right into it. In our strategy section today, talk a little bit about the bat. And can you give everyone just a very quick synopsis of what the bat is, and more importantly, how the bat differs from what maybe some other projection systems do?
Yeah, so the bat is obviously a sabermetrically, sabermetric foundation. I don't know what I'm saying. It's a sabermetric projection system. It projects the stats of future ball players. It does all kinds of cool stuff. It does a lot of the basics that most systems do: regression, weighting, aging, that kind of thing. The thing that I think maybe sets it apart the most is that the bat originally started as a DFS projection system, so it was very involved with the minutiae of all the different, you know, little factors that happen on a baseball field that impact a game. You know, what the, not just who the opposing pitcher is or the ballpark, but like the umpire and catcher pitch framing and, you know, the exact alignment of the defense and different weather factors and all kinds of stuff like that. And so one of the things I think that the bat does really well is adjusts for this context. Look at all the situations that a player has faced over a season or over his career or whatever sample size we're looking at. And it will say, okay, on aggregate, over all of these plate appearances, this player has either faced, you know, a really tough set of circumstances or a really easy set of circumstances or somewhere in the middle. And it will adjust the player's stats accordingly. If a player has, you know, faced a really, really easy schedule, then his numbers are probably better than we would otherwise expect them to be. And so the bat will adjust for those things, and then it will look at what the schedule looks like going forward, and it will adjust it again based on, you know, what the expected, you know, level of competition or park or whatever in the future is going to be.
It's a really ingenious way that you've done it. And for those that want to take a look at the bat, you can find the full season projections on Fangraphs. And for the daily projections, you can go to Roto Grinders and purchase those projections. They really are great. Have you analyzed them and compared them to some other projection systems to see where you're a little bit higher or a little bit lower on the bat, on players?
I haven't done it systematically. I've definitely gone through and looked at individual players and noticed that there are certain guys that the bat is either, you know, a lot higher or a lot lower than other systems on. I'd like to kind of go through and do it, you know, a little more systematically, see exactly who the big ones are. But there are definitely some guys that have stuck out to me.
All right. So I did a quick comparison to the ATC projections, are the ones obviously that I run. The bat is noticeably higher on guys like Jake Bowers, Trevor Story, Kike Hernandez, Matt
Boyd. Hold on. We got to circle back to that. The bat is higher on Kike Hernandez
than ATC is. Yes.
That's so funny. In DFS circles, Kike Hernandez, people love talking about their lefty mashers, guys who, you know, hit left-handed pitchers really well, which mathematically is a very noisy thing and isn't something that the bat really buys into a lot. And so people love playing Kike Hernandez against lefties in DFS. And the bat is always like, no, don't do it. It's stupid. So for you to say that the bat is high on Kike Hernandez is just really funny to me.
Interesting. Interesting. Pitchers that they're higher than ATC, DeGrom and Matt Boyd comes out really well on them. Where the bat's lower, Tommy Pham, Jake Realmuto, and Luis Castillo. The bat is very pessimistic on Luis Castillo. I'm not sure if you noticed that.
I did not notice that. I thought the bat actually kind of liked him. I guess not. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
So, interesting. Lower, of course, comparatively. All right. So just talking general strategy, and, you know, this is more of a fantasy podcast. Can you tell me what kind of general strategy you like to use in an auction or draft when you're getting to it?
The most basic way to explain my strategy in any auction or draft is get lots of value. Like, it really is that simple for me. You know, there's maybe some consideration towards having – you know, a balance of categories, but really value is the name of the game. You know, there's so many differing opinions out there and, you know, different ways people evaluate players that you are always going to be able to find guys who are cheaper than your projections or your process or however you're determining what a player is worth. You're always going to be able to find players who are, you know, being priced down. And those are the guys that I like to go after. And it's really kind of that simple.
Right, right. So number one this year is Mike Trout. Everyone's picking him. And Mookie Betts is pretty much the consensus number two. Who do you have as your number three and four picks in a draft?
Honestly, if at all possible, I want a lower pick because I kind of think Chris Sale and Jacob DeGrom, to maybe a slightly lesser degree, are probably the next most valuable players on the board. But you don't have to take Chris Sale at number two. You know, what's he going at now? Like number 13 or something like that? Number 12?
So,
I mean, if at all possible, I would rather draft at the end of the first round, get one of those guys and have a higher pick in the second round because I really think that they are, you know, after Trout, the next most valuable guys on the board. If I did have the second pick, maybe I would go with JD or Mookie and then take, you know, a Luis Severino at the end of the second round or something like that.
Okay.
But I mean, I really think that the value really is with those high-end starting pitchers this year.
Right. Now, Jose Ramirez is going three and Lindor was going four. Ruvain, what is your injury update on Lindor?
Well, Lindor has a right calf strain, and they announced that he's going to be out 7 to 9 weeks, which actually places him coming back around opening day, and that's the best-case scenario. My opinion is that the best-case scenario is that he's probably going to miss the first or second week of the season because people with calf strain typically have setbacks. Just look at Josh Donaldson, who had a calf strain for 4 months last year. Now, initially, he was going number four according to NFBC. Now he's going around 11, so he's going later in the first round. Now, his replacement, Yu Chang, who's next on the depth chart, he was one of their top prospects in the past, but he hasn't done really that much in the minors recently. This past Arizona Fall League, he did hit .337 with four homers and an OBP of .396. But it's just the Arizona Fall League, and a lot of people's numbers were actually higher during the Fall League than during the season. The problem with having Lindor out is that it also, if he even misses a couple of weeks, it lessens the lineup. It shortens the lineup in Cleveland, and it actually may affect the other players in Cleveland as well. So I think that he will probably be back the second or third week of the season, no sooner.
Okay.
I have a question for you, Ruvain.
Yeah, sure.
When he comes back, is this the kind of injury that you expect to maybe linger and affect his stolen base output, or is it something once he's back, he's good to go again?
I think at first they're going to tell him not to run. Cleveland, they need him to play. They need him to be on the field, so they're going to tell him not to run. So he may not see his steals start to accumulate until, let's say, June or July, if he doesn't re-aggravate it, because re-aggravating a calf strain is a very easy thing to do if you try to come back too soon.
That's quite a lot. Yeah, that'll bump him, you know, towards pick 16, 17, in my opinion, if you're going to take out a lot of his steals, which is his major value is having the combo of homers and steals in a rotisserie league.
Well, if you were Terry Francona, would you tell him the second week in April to go start stealing? I don't think so.
No,
it just
makes
sense.
No, they have to make the best baseball decision, and it's for us to react and make the best fantasy decision. All right. Now, Derek, have you been following the Tout Wars draft and hold so far?
I've been following it to an extent. I follow it when I see people post their picks on Twitter. I haven't actually gone through and, you know, methodically looked at the whole list yet. But I did notice, you know, a few of yours, and I thought your draft started out really strong. I don't know what you've done since then, but I thought you had a really great first few rounds.
Well, thanks for that, and hopefully that will continue, obviously. Now, this is the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational podcast, and are you guys excited for Sunday? It starts Sunday at 1 Eastern.
You know, I actually have not submitted my name to be in it yet. I think maybe I need to look into doing that.
Well, I'm actually looking forward to it. I have a 9th pick in my league, I think it's either League 4 I'm in, and there are a couple of people in my league who are in other Tout leagues, so it's a little bit intimidating.
All right, yeah. I'm in League 6, and I have the 2nd pick, so it'll likely be Mookie Betts for me. All right, on to the ATC player discussion here. So, Derek, if you don't know, what we do here is there are a bunch of players, as you said, you know, when the way you draft them in leagues, you see what players are undervalued and you try to get value. So what we do here is we highlight a couple of players that we see are undervalued and discuss if we like them or not, and if we should consider them for our draftable list. So we're doing starting pitchers today. It's our starting pitcher episode. First player that I have to highlight is Zach Greinke. To me, Zach Greinke is a whip darling. He, you know, all the projections are showing him as a great whip guy. But interestingly, projections are showing his ERA jumping up to like the 3.6, 3.9 range when the last couple of years he's been at a 3.2, which is interesting, you know, especially since he's had the humidor there. I think it would stay low. Interesting. His home run to fly ball rate is creeping up a bit. His swinging strike rate is down a touch, so I do worry about that there. But in a draft or auction, he has 200 strikeout potential. He could pitch 200 innings. He's going for par value right now, and starting pitching is on the expensive side. So for me, he's a great 1A type pitcher. I took him in the 6th round of Tout Wars draft and hold. What do you think about him, Derek?
He's a guy who I don't think I'd really be targeting this year. 6th round, I think, is perfectly fine, but he's a guy who is just, I guess, unspectacular. Like, I think you're kind of counting on the volume with him. Like, if he gets over 200 innings, he'll probably deliver value for you. But he's a guy who I've never really been that big on. Like, he doesn't get the same kind of strikeouts that a lot of the other top guys get, or some of the younger guys that I think are actually a little bit better than him maybe get. And, you know, you mentioned his home run per fly ball rate has been, you know, up the past few years. Like, the past 3 years, his home runs are way up. And I think part of the reason why we see the projection systems being higher on his ERA than his actual ERAs have been is partially because of that. Because, like, you know, after 3 years, even though home run per fly ball is one of those stats we consider a little flukier, like, 3 years is starting to become a pretty solid sample. You know, pitchers do control home runs to an extent. And, you know, the bat in particular really is not a fan of him in terms of home runs. And so, like, you know, the BABIPs are supposed, you know, the BABIPs should come up. They've been really too low the last few years. And so I think he's fine, but, like, I don't think he's anything spectacular. And I really do think you need the volume for him to really meet value, as opposed to a younger guy who, you know, maybe doesn't need 200 innings because he's going to get you more strikeouts or, you know, whatever it is. So I think he's fine.
Okay. Yeah. Looking at the bat, you actually have the highest home run allowed projection of anyone at 29, which is a lot. Ruben, do you have anything to add to Zach Greinke? Do you like, not like?
I'm actually very high on Greinke. I think he's being overlooked a little bit because he has been so consistent. He's what we call a boring player. If he's able to get, like you said, Derek, if he's able to get to 200 innings, he should be able to get to the 200 strikeout range, and he's an ERA and a whip stabilizer. And that's what you need, especially if you're in a deeper league. If you have these guys who have ERAs in like 4.5 or whips near 1.3, you need a guy like this because his history, he has not had a whip. He had a whip in 2016 of 1.27, but beyond that, that's his highest whip he's ever had. I mean, it's, you know.
It's funny, okay, because you say he's this boring guy. And those are almost always the guys that I gravitate towards. So it's funny that I'm a little more lukewarm on Greinke, because boring is where the value normally is. And I love boring guys.
Yeah, that's our motto here on the show. All right, so that's Zach Greinke. Some mixed feelings about him. I don't love him, but for the price he's going, I think he's a good buy this year, because I don't think people are jumping on him. Our next guy is Kenta Maeda. Ruvane, why don't you start? What are your thoughts on Kenta Maeda?
Well, I think Kenta Maeda's value is in if he's a starter. Now, right now, the Dodgers have a whole bunch of starters. They have Kershaw, Buehler, Ryu, they have Hill, they have Maeda, they also have Stripling, and they have Urias in the minors. If he's able to start, he can be a good, let's say, late pick pitcher, because he's consistent. He will not give you an extremely high whip. He will not if he starts. If he's coming out of the bullpen and he did what he did last year, where he's starting, then he's relieving, then he's starting. Pitchers are people of habit, and they have to be consistent doing one thing or the other. Otherwise, it throws everything off. So he would be valuable only if he's a starter, though.
So Derek the Bat has him for a 3.67 ERA, a 1.17 WHIP, which is actually the best ratios of almost all the projections that I use. I'm guessing you like him, Derek. Maybe not. Why don't you tell us about Kenta Maeda?
I like him from a skills and contextual standpoint. I think he's a good pitcher. I think the Dodgers pitchers, I've kind of been saying it for years, pitch with awesome context. They pitch in the National League. They don't have to face a DH. They pitch in a pitcher's park. They have, you know, a great pitch framing catcher in Austin Barnes. I like Maeda. The only issue I have with him is volume. You know, Ruvane kind of alluded to it, but like the Dodgers have a ton of options here. And so it's going to depend a little bit on how many starts he makes. And Dave Roberts with his pitchers, you know, he pulls them early. So even, you know, one start from Kenta Maeda isn't the same as one start from, you know, Zach Greinke or someone like that, because he's only going to average 88 or 90 pitches per start and he's going to get pulled. So like, I like him, but they have legitimately 9 awesome pitchers that could be, you know, one of the better pitchers on pretty much any staff in baseball. And so it's just going to depend a little bit on the innings, which are obviously hard to project, especially in a situation like this.
So I happen to love Kenta Maeda. Over the last 4 seasons, he is a top 20 starting pitcher by Sierra, which is situation-independent ERA. Last year, he had a K per 9 of 11, which was his best year yet. His xFIP was 3.37. His BABIP last year was actually pretty high, so I think the 3.81 ERA he had last year was unlucky. I'm projecting him for 133 innings of 3.81 ERA, and at that level, he is a bargain. He's actually a very big bargain.
I think the bat is actually even a little more optimistic than that. So
he is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, the bat is, as I said, one of the better ratio ones there. Now, if he can get back to 150, 160, he had 176 innings in 2016, this is a $20 pitcher. So I think that at his current price, he's a bargain, and that's the floor. I don't think he's going down. And outside speculation, if Kenley Jansen is injured, that he becomes a closer. Outside speculation. So that's my take on Maeda. Any other thoughts on him?
I actually think that Maeda is dependent on the next pitcher we're actually going to bring up is Hyunjin Ryu, because – for 40% of the Dodgers starting pitchers from last year spent more time in the DL than they did in the starting rotation. Ryu himself had, in 2015, he had a shoulder injury. 2016, shoulder and elbow. 2017, foot, forearm, and hip. Last year, a groin. He's a perfect patient if you want to teach orthopedics to people. There's everything. Everything's always going wrong with him. When he's healthy, he had that one year in 2013 when he came in and he took over. But since then, he has always been hurt. And that's why Kenta Maeda can benefit from that. But I'm not high on Ryu at all because of the fact that he's always injured.
No, and some of his luck metrics were up last year, so he was slightly lucky. I mean, he had under a 2 ERA and a 1 WHIP. Interestingly, last year, he's better versus righties than lefties, which is interesting for a lefty pitcher. What do you think of Hyunjin Ryu, Derek?
My take on him is very, very similar to Kenta Maeda, which is that I think the skills are great. I think the volume is a question mark. I obviously, with the injuries, like, I think they're a little bit more of a question mark for Ryu, but I would still think, you know, if he gets 20 starts, like, he's probably going to be a pretty strong value given the numbers he's going to give you in those starts. So, you know, I'd be a little optimistic at what's a pretty low price for him.
Right. And actually, the bat is one of the more pessimistic projections. You have him at a 3.80 RA, which is much worse than some of the other projection systems, including my own, are projecting. But you're right. It's all about volume for these guys. Do you think he's healthy? I'm willing to bet the under on Ryu. I'm willing to bet the over in Maeda. So I prefer Maeda. But what do you guys prefer between Maeda or Ryu?
I would prefer Maeda. I think it's interesting. The bat doesn't try to project its own volume. It just goes based on the Fangraphs depth charts. And it basically has Maeda and Ryu projected for the same number of starts, same number of innings pitched, basically. But I would tend to think Maeda is the stronger bet for more starts. So that's where I would lean.
Same with me. I like Maeda better. However, if Ryu can stay on the mound, he could surprise people because he's still only 31, 32. So he's still young, so he still can do it.
Okay. Well, up north to Seattle, my next pitcher that I'm going to highlight, which I highlighted last week on Baseball HQ Radio, is Marco Gonzalez. Marco Gonzalez is not overly fantastic. He's actually a really boring pitcher, but he's going pretty late in drafts, and I think at the price, he is a good bargain. I project him to be an $8 pitcher, but he's going for about $2. I'm not projecting anything crazy. He is not a fantastic strikeout pitcher. He had only 145 strikeouts in 167 innings, but he does have some upside there. His first pitch strike is ticking up, which is very important for a soft tosser. He throws less than 2 walks per 9 innings, so he's a good whip upside pitcher. And I think that he has a chance of making some volume. He had 100 innings in the first half last year, so he is a volume guy. To me, this is a boring pitcher who can net you maybe a small profit, just somebody to stick in the back of your mind late in drafts. Ruvane, what do you think of Marco Gonzalez?
I think he's a good guy to have as your number 5, number 6 guy. You can't expect too much out of him because Seattle's not that great of a team this year, considering they traded away half of it. If he can duplicate what he did last year, then he's great to have. However, he's only done it 1 year. In 2017, his whip was 1.75, and he did start 8 games. So he's still an unproven commodity in my mind, and I'd probably stay away from him.
All right. And what about you, Derek?
He's not a guy I'd probably go out of my way to target, but he is that boring guy who's probably going to turn, you know, a little bit of a profit for you. So depending on how the rest of your roster is coming together, if you just kind of need that guy that you want to bank on some volume and pretty much know reasonably enough what you're going to get, which is, you know, an ERA in the low 4s, you know, not a huge strikeout rate, but probably worth more than the $1 or $2 you pay for him, then I think he's perfectly fine to fill in the back of your staff or to have on your bench.
Right. And he fits my mold of stars and scrubs pitching that I'm advocating this year. Is get your high guys, and you can drop down to these kind of guys to give you the volume to fill in. All right, now here's a pitcher that I know Ruvane is really high on, and he has been for years, Robbie Ray. So, Ruvane, why don't you talk a little bit about maybe some of his injury issues and what you think we can expect for this coming year?
Okay, Robbie Ray in 2017 missed a few starts because of concussion, but last year was the biggie when he missed a bunch of starts because of an oblique issue. When a pitcher has an oblique issue, I've seen it's a little more common in left-handed pitchers than right-handed. I'm not sure why, but that's just the way it is. When you have an oblique issue, your mechanics go all out of whack, which is why his whip was extremely – I mean, he had a whip of 1.35. In the previous year, he had a whip of only 1.15, so – he was off, and I think he may have been compensating for it. So I'm actually looking for a rebound season for Robbie Ray. He has upside of 200 plus strikeouts, and I'm actually very high on him, and he is healthy right now. So,
okay, what do you think, Derek, of Robbie Ray?
He's a guy who he's not fun to watch because he's just like all over the place, and you think he's going to implode at any point, and probably 10 times out of the year he will. but the end result is going to be a good one for him. So as long as you're not sweating him out, you know, every single start, you're probably going to get some pretty good numbers out of him. He's a guy who gets more strikeouts than almost any pitcher in baseball. You know, if he had any semblance of control, he'd be one of the best pitchers in the game. He doesn't have control, so you have to worry about the whip. You have to worry about, you know, bad innings catching up to him. But he is a guy who has really strong skills. He's going to give up some long balls. He's going to have runners on base when it happens. He's going to have some bad outings. But the end result at the end of the year is going to be, you know, a pretty good ERA and a lot of strikeouts. And I think that has value.
I actually wrote an article comparing Robbie Ray and Max Scherzer before Max Scherzer figured it out. Do you think that's a good comparison? Because Max Scherzer also, he was all over the place. Then all of a sudden he figured it out. And this is the same type of pitcher.
Yeah, it's tough to ever bank on a guy figuring out control, because control is just so finicky like that and so hard to really get a hold on. I think Scherzer is more the exception to the rule rather than someone that we can, you know, really truly compare him to. But you never know. Like, if that control ever does click into place, he's going to be amazing.
Right. So here's my take on Robbie Ray, and I consider him to be in the same category as Chris Archer. I call this Chris Archer territory. It's a guy that's going to have 200 strikeouts for you. His ERA is probably going to be lousy. It's going to be high threes, may even be over four. I mean, I don't have tremendous confidence in Ray or Archer. The whip is going to be somewhat unmanageable, 1.3, 1.4, 1.25 if you're lucky. Guys like that, I find, are not so valuable to draft, because they're all going to go for a high value because people see the 200 strikeouts. But you can draft Dellin Betances for 100 strikeouts and use that roster slot for some good two-star pitchers as they come up and stream in the meantime. The cost of Dellin Betances plus streamers is a lot cheaper than what Robbie Ray and Chris Archer are going for. And your ratios are going to come out so much better. Strikeouts will be close if you're streaming correctly. And I don't know. I don't think Robbie Ray is getting many wins this year on the Diamondbacks. He had only 6 last year. Nobody is projecting more than 10-11 on the Diamondbacks. So for me, I have no interest in Robbie Ray at the cost he's going. I can replicate his stats elsewhere.
So I think that's really interesting, and I'm totally in favor of the elite relievers like Betances. I think he's perpetually underrated. Love streaming pitchers, but I think it's interesting the way you kind of frame that. Like you said, Robbie Ray's going to have a lousy ERA, I think was the exact word you used. You said, you know, it's going to be in like the high threes, like a 3.80 ERA or something like that. That's exactly what Greinke's projected for, though, and Greinke, you said before, is the, you know, like the stable, you know, ERA stabilizer guy. So like I totally get, like, the whip is not going to be the same as Greinke at all, but he's going to make up for it a little bit with strikeouts. And, you know, the wins are going to be probably pretty similar, you know, pitching, you know, with the same kind of context. So I guess just explain to me how you're seeing the difference there.
So Robbie Ray is going maybe a little bit later than Greinke is right now. Okay, he's a little bit cheaper. Greinke is going to also get somewhere around 200 strikeouts. He's had that last year. He's projected for about that this year. So the strikeouts aren't all that far apart. The whip is miles apart. Greinke is going to really be a whip stabilizer. I mean, I like having the whip stabilizers in the beginning of the draft so that I can stream later on, or I can get a volume guy with maybe a not so good whip, but later, a $1, $2 pitcher. In terms of wins, I think Greinke is going to end up with more wins. Greinke stays in more innings. Robbie Ray gets into trouble more and could be pulled out or so. I just don't see the cost of having a terrible whip. And I don't know what Robbie Ray is going to be. He's uncertain. He could have a 5 ERA. He had in 2016, he had a 4.9 ERA. In 2014, he had an 8 ERA. I don't know what I'm going to get out of him. So I don't need that uncertainty around the same price as Greinke. I can't replicate the good whip and the 200 Ks on the waiver wire. I can replicate a lousy whip and the 200 Ks on the waiver wire.
That's fair.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Good discussion here. Good discussion here. And I've had some people who agree with me, and some people will say, nah, but it's 200 strikeouts. You know, it's all how you play the game. Next one, Andrew Heaney of the Los Angeles Angels. Derek, what are your thoughts on Andrew?
He's a guy that I'm pretty high on, and it seems like other people are maybe kind of overlooking him or something. You know, he was an elite prospect for the Marlins, you know, came over his first year with the Angels, really wasn't anything spectacular, especially in terms of peripherals. You know, has dealt with some injuries, missed a lot of time in 2016, 2017. But he's a guy who has strong pedigree, who had really strong numbers last year that were better than the ERA indicated. And he's a guy who projections, you know, really seem to like. So I'm a big fan of Haney. I like the stuff. I like the numbers. I like the pedigree. I like that he put together a full season last year. And I like the price.
So he's got a great strikeout rate. He strikes out about a batter an inning. Yes, a batter an inning. His velocity has been creeping up in the last couple years. He's got a very good first pitch strike. He's got a very good swinging strike rate. He looked healthy last year. He had a nice healthy second half. I don't know about his health. Ruben can discuss that more. He seems like a guy who is somebody that can really burst onto the scene here. I think he's creeping up in draft, so I'm not sure that his price is any good anymore. But Ruben, what can you tell me about Heaney's health and what do you think of him?
Well, right now he is healthy. He did deal with an elbow issue in 2017 and a shoulder issue in 2016. He only pitched a grand total of 27 innings in 2016 and 2017 combined. And he pitched 180 innings last year. So the question is, how is he going to rebound from the 180-inning season? Because this is uncharted territory for him. Will he bounce back? Will he suffer from arm fatigue early in the season? Will he break down? Because he did have an issue with his elbow last 2 years ago. This stuff tends to come back. I really want to stay away from him. He is considered healthy, though. So, if you want to draft him, take that risk, that's fine. But I'm staying away from him.
So just today, he came up in the 12th round, and I was actually discussing this today with Ruvane. I had a choice between Andrew Heaney and J.A. Happ, and ultimately, I went with J.A. Happ. I thought Happ could help me with more wins. I thought Happ's strikeouts was decent enough, and I just don't – I like him as a less risky play over Andrew Heaney. Derek, what are you thinking of between J.A. Happ and Andrew Heaney? Who would you take and why?
I think it's a close call. Off the top of my head, I want to say Haney, but I can see the case for Happ. I can see Happ's ERA ballooning maybe a little higher than maybe people are expecting, just because, you know, he does have a history of giving up home runs. He's pitching in Yankee Stadium. Like, I think it's a close call. I can see the safety aspect of it. You know, maybe his health is a little bit less of a question mark. But I think the upside on Haney is a lot higher, and I think the mean projection for them is probably going to be pretty similar. So I might lean Haney.
All righty. So before we go, just some quick questions to put people on the spot. Where do you think Bryce Harper, just for Derek, because we talked about this last week on the show, where do you think Bryce Harper is going to end up? And where do you think Dallas Keuchel is going to end up?
That's a good question. If I were to guess, I would think Harper makes a lot of sense for Philly. Keuchel, I have no idea. Like, just no idea. I think Keuchel is a really good pitcher. I think he's underrated. I think whoever gets him is going to probably be getting a bargain and a really, really strong part of their rotation. I have no idea who it's going to be. I don't even have a guess.
Well, everything I've heard about Keuchel is that if the Phillies are able to sign Harper, then they will sign Keuchel also, because they want to do their stupid spending, whatever they call it. But we haven't seen it yet. If Keuchel does sign there, I think it's like a similar signing to them when they signed Jake Arrieta. Similar type of pitcher. He's not really a strikeout pitcher anymore, and he sort of fits the mold for them.
I think that would actually be kind of a strong landing spot for Keuchel, kind of a sneaky one, because people, they think of Philly as this really tough ballpark, but like it's you know, really great at boosting home runs, but it's pretty much neutral overall. You know, Keuchel as a ground ball guy, you know, he's not really going to be hit by those home runs all that much. It boosts strikeouts, which will help a guy who kind of needs a little bit of that boost. You know, all the other parks in the division, basically, except for Nationals Park, are pitchers' parks. you know, it's pretty weak hitters in that division. He's not going to have to face a DH anymore. I think Keuchel in the National League, especially with the Phillies offense with Bryce Harper, I think that would be really, really a really sneaky pick. I think he would be a guy I'd really be starting to target.
So I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Dallas Keuchel will sign with San Diego Padres. I think that I don't think they're going to sign Harper, but look at their rotation in San Diego, and I don't really see much of a rotation there. I think that Keuchel stuff will play very well in San Diego. I think that they have the cap space and the money to do it, and they're now in win now, not necessarily this year, but win 2-3 years from now. They're going to bring up Tatis. They've now bring on Hosmer. They've brought on Machado. I think that they could really use a starting pitcher, and I think Keuchel might end up there. Any thoughts on that?
I could totally see it. I mean, they're clearly going in on kind of putting these veteran pieces around what they think is probably going to be a really, really strong young nucleus in, you know, a year or two. And so, you know, given what they did with Machado, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Keuchel sign there too.
All righty. All right. Well, we're going to wrap things up. Once again, thank you very much, Derek, for being on the show. It's Derek Carty, who is over at ESPN and RotoGrinders. Did I leave off anything, Derek?
That is about it. Maybe the bat. That's the other one.
All right. And you can tell everyone where you can be reached.
On Twitter at Derek Carty. I absolutely love interacting with people. I'm happy to answer any questions you have about literally anything. So feel free to hit me up on Twitter, and we'll talk throughout the season.
I have to say that Derek is one of the nicest guys on Twitter, and he really does respond well and does interact very, very nicely with at least with me, he's done so. Really, do give him a follow and interact with him. He's a great follow on Twitter. And Ruvane, why don't you let us know where you can be reached?
I can be reached on Twitter at MLB Injury Guru. I'm updating injuries as frequently as possible. I did post earlier today that there are some things you should be worried about in spring training, some you shouldn't. If you hear the word strain or soreness, that's perfectly normal. If you hear the word pulled or torn or broken, obviously that's something to keep an eye on, but don't worry about the injuries during spring training. I will answer any questions, though, and try to get it out as soon as possible, as well as keeping updated the book, The Fantasy Benefit, from Justin Mason. My updates go straight into his updated book weekly.
All right, and I'm Ariel Cohen. You can reach me at ATCNY. I know some people like it long, but it is a short Twitter name, ATCNY. You can read all my stuff at Fangraphs and now also at CBS Sportsline. Some really good stuff put up this week about projections and how to convert them into auction values and how to handle some special cases. And of course, you can hear me right here on the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational Beat the Shift podcast. All right. Once again, thank you very much, Derek Carty, for joining us on the show as our guest tonight. And as always, we wish everyone a great fantasy season.
First place in my league, got a blockbuster on my way, and a pickup on my sleeve. They call my team insane, say I'm the one to be. You better bring your A game and start playing, cause every single week another win for me.
Yo, commissioner, you can just pay me now. City win first place, then take a bow. Finish on top, I'ma set the standard. Don't believe me, you could check the standings. When I draft, I make smart selections. Got more sleepers than a narcoleptic. Meet your match, kid, my lineup's nasty. It's far-fetched, thinking you might catch me. No surprise, I'm taking home the prize. Only time I rest is a playoff bye. Make amazing finds off the waiver wire. All day and night, better stay retired. See me in first, all proud and cozy. Bro, please, I can't even count my trophies. Bragging, even with my bats are slumping, I'ma pack a punch, that track a junkie.
I'm the one they don't wanna play. First place in my league. Got a blockbuster on my way, and a pickup.